It's a mystical place for me. I think I heard someone describe it once as pure hell, because somebody sitting in a holding cell looking out over the bay and all of the surrounding area, it's in San Francisco, which is the most beautiful city in the world, that's got to be pure torture, because you know you can't touch it.
Faith. By definition, it's something that is felt with strong conviction without tangible evidence of its existence. Many claim to have it, but how do we attain it? It can't be held. It can't be sold. But it can be passed down. Faith is invaluable to those who feel it. How is it that this belief can unite us regardless of our differences? It's because of conviction, that feeling inside that links so many, from the far corners of the earth to the closest reaches of our neighborhoods. Faith is all around us. Faith springs from a glorious past forward to a promising future. The faith that those who not so quietly defeated rivals and redefined record books would inspire their brethren of today to reach such epic accomplishments. And all along, there are those who cheer. In their minds, they envision. In their hearts, they believe. And because of that, they are simply known as the faithful. There are many iconic Bay Area landmarks that leap out to both native San Franciscans and to those visiting the area as well. Structures, bridges, even moving reminders that Northern California, and specifically San Francisco, is as unique a region as any. Representation of the city's individuality is literally rock solid when gazing off its shoreline. Alcatraz Island sits alone, watching over the bay as it has for countless years. Shrouded in mystery, stories, and pages of history, the island, which was once home to a military garrison and penitentiary, became the most famous federal penitentiary in American history. It also became an unlikely birthplace for faithfulness. But to understand how the island bred 49ers fandom, we have to travel back in time, when World War II was coming to an end and men from all over the United States were looking for work, sometimes thousands of miles from their hometown.
My father was a correctional officer here on Alcatraz from, I think, 1948 to 1963 when it closed.
He was born in Williamsburg, Virginia, and then he went in World War II, and then after that he went to Ohio, joined the prison service, and then he eventually transferred over to Alcatraz.
He was really quite, I wouldn't say shy, but he was reticent to kind of talk about the past. As he got older, he kind of opened up a little bit more and started telling stories. He had stories about the Birdman of Alcatraz. He had his theories on the people that were trying to escape.
Although Alcatraz's MO was that it was inescapable from an inmate's point of view, the men who worked on the island and the many families who lived alongside those men often found the city of San Francisco to be the perfect escape. Around 50 families called the island home. However, they often boarded a boat at their leisure to take in a movie, museum, or to usher in a night of dinner and dancing. Some ushered in something entirely different.
When I was about 5 or 6, he had the job of ushering on Sundays, and he used to take me to Kezar Stadium. He put me in a bench right near the big tunnel where the players come running out onto the field. I'd be right there as the players came running out, and I saw Y.A. Tittle, R.C. Owens. I probably saw the first alley-oop.
This has got to be the alley-oop. There's no time for anything else.
I think I was right there from the very beginning without really being aware that I was.
A truer statement may have never been uttered. Many men on both sides of the bars were there from the very beginning without realizing that they were becoming faithful. One such guard who patrolled the cell blocks with Lou Mushaw was George DiVincenzi.
Louis and I were very close. We used to eat together, work together, and I know he's a strong 49er fan, but not as strong as me. I saw the first game the 49ers ever played in September of 1946. They played the New York Yankees in the All-American Conference. That was my introduction to my first professional football game. It was great, absolutely great. The color, the green grass, the 49ers' bright red uniform, I was at awe when I saw it for the first time.
Although it's debatable on who loved the team more, Lou Muschall's faithfulness was undeniable. Although not a native San Franciscan, he had released all other fandom to focus on his 49ers, and that feeling of faith was infectious to those around him.
I mean, he was a diehard 49er fan in the strongest sense of the word. That came from his time here in San Francisco. It never left him. You know, he ended up moving away to Santa Barbara when they closed Alcatraz, but he always followed them on the weekends when the 49ers were playing. That's where we were, up at Grandma and Grandpa's watching the game.
We always talked about the 49ers.
That was his team.
We always watched the 49ers on TV every Sunday, every Monday. Coming together with the family was over a 49ers game.
He got influenced kind of early on by my grandfather. Like I said, it's not hard to root for the 49ers, but I think my grandfather probably had a lot of influence over what he liked.
Well, on the island, I just think of my grandfather and all the stories he told me. We used to walk the halls when he would bring me, and he would describe every story, every little thing. That comes back to me, and I kind of get emotional seeing these halls and remembering the stories that he brought.
When we return, see how the history of the 49ers was heard throughout the halls of the Rock. And later, a grandfather's move across the country forged a career, generations in the making. Do you have your own incredible faithful story to tell? Or do you know someone who truly is a faithful? Let us know about it. Email 49ersstudios at fns@49ers.com. and share it with the world.
Alcatraz really does stand as somewhat of an iconic symbol. It's kind of a view of you know, San Francisco's past, its dark history, as well as a lot of its reform. And I think that, you know, back in the day, it was a government symbol. People do associate Alcatraz with San Francisco. What's incredible to me is that when the prison opened, there was such a mystique around the island, and that mystique still lives today. You know, it's still buried in myth. The stories still intrigue people, and I think just living in the extreme has really captured the public in that sense. Well, basically, when Alcatraz opened in the 1930s, you know, it was intended to sort of house what was considered America's most notorious and worst criminals within the federal prison system. So you had men like Al Capone, Machine Gun Kelly, and then even in the later years, you had men like Whitey Bulger, who, of course, is back in prison today, and then, of course, the famous Birdman of Alcatraz. Just its location, just, you know, the basic concept of Alcatraz and all the different redundancies in security, the guards who were basically doing frequent counts, it was considered inescapable at its time, and it was a symbol, you know, just as much as it was as a working prison.
Author Michael Esslinger, who spent decades researching Alcatraz and interviewing scores of inmates, officers, and families who grew up on the island, is not only one of the world's most knowledgeable Alcatraz historians, he is also a fellow faithful. Spending time on the Rock with Esslinger helped uncover astonishing facts as well as falsehoods.
In truth, you know, Alcatraz is really embedded in a lot of myth. But the fact is that with a lot of the guys that I interviewed, it certainly was a tough prison. I mean, you had a mixed group of inmates here. But in reality, you know, it was one of the better prisons within the federal system. You know, they felt that they were treated fairly by officers. The food here was exceptional. It was some of the best within the system. And then also, you know, just having your own cell. You know, they looked small and certainly uninviting and, you know, very close confinement quarters. But in reality, to have your own space, I think that a lot of inmates who, you know, had been to some tougher prisons within the system, Alcatraz really was an easier place for them to do time.
In comparison to harsher facilities throughout the United States, Alcatraz may have had some advantages. despite the isolated Stony Keep that has captivated imaginations for decades. One such advantage that the prison lacked was installed in the mid-1950s, and that was the ability to listen to radio broadcasts via a headset and jack, which was mounted on the walls of the cell. The first broadcast was not a 49er game. Rather, it was a baseball game where the Brooklyn Dodgers faced off against the New York Yankees. In time, 49er games were broadcast, and the inmates had the ability to listen and enjoy a team that was only a handful of miles away.
And Settle faded back and lobbed a screen pass to McElhinney, who threaded his way down the sidelines for 35 yards. 49er blockers were having a field day as Wilson and McElhinney clear the way for Joe Perry to ramble 59 yards to the Chicago 4-yard line. Quarterback Duncan hands off to Johnson, who goes over the right side, and it's touchdown 49ers as they take a 28-17 lead.
You know, before they ended up getting these radio jacks in their cells, you know, life had really stood still. They didn't really have a good sense of what was going on out in free society. The news and magazines that they were allowed to have were very limited.
Well, that was the era before they put these listening devices in each cell. And the 49ers would play on Sunday, and then the following morning, they wanted to know who won, what happened. A lot of the inmates were great 49er fans. The San Francisco Chronicle every morning used to drop off 25 sport pages, not the newspaper, just the sport pages. And they would pass them around, and that's all was the topic of a conversation on most of these inmates on Monday morning about the 49ers' victories.
You know, if you look at some of the old historic photographs, you'll actually see that in the mess hall, they used to have like a chalkboard above where the menu was kept, and you would actually see scores of sports teams written up on the chalkboard. And imagine that, you know, you've been completely isolated from free society to be able to put on your earphones and actually listen to the sounds of a football game that was happening outside in free society. Many, many men that I interviewed always talk about how sacred those earphones were because it was their real means of escape. They could lay on their bunk, put on the earphones, and then just imagine the sights and the smells of the hot dogs and things like that. It's very profound for them.
Catching the defense, snapping, Tettle bootleg around his own left end to go into the end zone for a 49er touchdown to make the score 14-0.
Sports were huge on Alcatraz. I mean, that really was, I think, one of the central topics that men talked about. It really was one of the more neutral subjects and probably acceptable subjects that the convicts and the officers could exchange. There wasn't a lot of trust. You know, certainly anybody seen talking to an officer typically would not have been trusted by the inmate population. But I think it was acceptable to ask for scores and things like that.
Especially on a Monday morning after the 49ers won, it'd be the whole topic of a conversation would last all day. And that newspaper's 25 sport pages from the San Francisco Chronicle would float around this whole cell house all day long on Monday.
The exchange of box scores and stats from cell to cell via a newspaper was about the most movement inmates on the island could enjoy. Regardless of whatever creature comforts they were given, whether it was a single cell or the use of headphones, it didn't diminish the harsh reality that took place in plain sight from Alcatraz. That reality was everyday life in San Francisco.
In some of these other rural prisons, you know, there really wasn't a sense of movement, if you will. The difference with Alcatraz was that you had the city that was basically alive right across the bay. They could hear sirens, they could hear the movement of the city, they could smell the chocolate factory. But a lot of times they could actually hear the narrators of the tour boats going around the island talking about the different inmates and talking about how notorious they were. They can hear the women laughing, which I think to them was very profound, and especially after lights out at night. It was probably a tough existence to be able to see the lights moving in the city and to know that, you know, their freedom is basically so far away that yet, you know, freedom is right across the bay. I think that Alcatraz is incredible in the fact that it's like a living museum. I mean, it's one of the few historical sites that you can take a walk and actually look at the history, look at the building structure as it was when men were here. It's always, you know, incredible to me that history is, you know, so tangible and so touchable. if you look back, you know, in San Francisco's history, I think that, you know, the 49ers, you know, they're part of the fabric of who, you know, and who we are, who the city is. And so I think it's essential. I think it's every bit a part of, you know, our history here as Alcatraz is.
Just off the coast of the northernmost point of San Francisco lies Alcatraz Island, 22 acres of rock and foliage, which houses America's most famous prison. The vast history of the island, from its years as a military fort, to its transformation into a federal penitentiary, to its quiet existence today as one of America's most fascinating landmarks, makes it truly unique. And as unique as the island is, stories and personalities from the rock are equally matchless. Men from all over the country populated the island, working on the staff as wardens, groundkeepers, and correctional officers, men like Lou Musial. Starting a new life in the Bay for these men and Lou alike meant generations of San Franciscans and faithful 49er fans blossomed from the unforgiving grounds of the island.
Well, if it wasn't for grandfather working here in Alcatraz, I would not be a 49ers fan at all. It just so happens that since he was working here, that's how the whole family became fans.
Lou's influence from his San Francisco roots here at Alcatraz has really spread through the family and even through my family, from Lou to Christina to James to me, and even a lot of my family on my dad's side is from back east. I have pulled my New York family into this 49er fandom as well, and when they get the games on, they'll call us and say, "Go Niners!" You know, and they're like thick Bronx accent. You know, a nucleus of fandom can really spread across a lot of people.
That nucleus of fandom not only spread across a lot of people, it also leapt into James Forsythe's work life. James went from true faithful to becoming a renowned blogger for his beloved 49ers, publishing content for RantSports.com. James uses his history, knowledge, and passion for the team to craft pieces for the masses. His emotional connection to the team manifests itself weekly in written form and throughout his family as well.
Well, faithful to me means staying true. There is only one team. What is my second favorite? I don't really have one. It is the 49ers, and that's all.
I think faithful is just that regardless of what the odds are and regardless of what failures you have and even your own successes, that, you know, you're always going to be faithful to that goal. And it's part of your fabric. It's who you are, and it's your belief system. I love the fact that the families of these men and people that worked here, it's amazing to see how affected they are. And even though that they may not have actually had an active role, you know, working and you know, walking the corridors of the prison, it certainly affected their lives, and they've taken a lot of their grandfather's legacy with them. In my household, the 49ers and the sounds of football and the sounds of my father yelling, you know, when he heard a touchdown. And those are very vivid memories for me. When I look back to my childhood, it's something that I think about. They're very special memories to me.
Members of the faithful, as you can see, we love telling a good story. Trust us to share yours by reaching out to 49ers Studios at fns@49ers.com. Movies and television have long portrayed the relationship between correctional officers and inmates as a toxic one. Mistrust, anger, and struggle prevail between the two groups. Certainly, this was the case for many in the penitentiary system. But empathy and respect also existed and was practiced by Alcatraz CO and ardent faithful, Lou Musial.
He had a very good rapport with the inmates here for the most part. I know he had a lot of compassion for them. He held a lot of views that the general public probably doesn't believe correctional officers have. There's always been a bad rap in media, but my father did not ever believe in the death penalty. He thought it was cruel and unusual punishment, and he believed in all people should be treated humanely. I think he lived that life with that belief and philosophy and tried to carry it through in everything that he did.